I completed my requirement for clinical pastoral education, or CPE as we call it, at St. Anthony North Hospital in Westminster as a chaplain with a group of three other women. Now, two of these women were in their early 20s, and the other was in her 60s, which meant I was often the bridge in our shared intergenerational learning. Now, CPE is an experience where you constantly draw from your life. That's the point. You take the stories that you're hearing in your ministry, and then you put them in relationship with your own life story, and then you see what comes up. The idea is that you become more conscious of your past and how it could be a barrier or a help in good ministry. This basic learning strategy meant that a lot of our time in CPE was spent with the four of us sharing stories about our lives. Now, the youngest of our group was 23, which I confess I had some initial prejudices about. I mean, I remember thinking, what life experiences will she have had that will be enough to really get at the depths of life as it presents itself in a community hospital? But as we got to know each other, I remembered my own self at 23 and just how intense that time of life can be, how it's often the time when life's biggest questions and transitions are all on the table. So that meant that there was plenty for all of us to learn from her. For example, she was falling in love that summer. It was new and long distance, and though she had been just friends before with the guy, she was realizing that something new was probably happening. But what, she wondered. What was their status? What was going to happen? Who were they? She told our group, "I think it's time to DTR. The other younger member nodded, "Yep, time to DTR. My older colleague looked at me for translation. But I was just as clueless as she was. I mean, so much for being the bridge. "Time to what?" I asked. "Oh, DTR, you know, define the relationship." And we got it. I mean, we'd never heard the exact expression, but we knew precisely what she meant. The slang was new, but the concept, ancient. Getting to the point in a relationship where you need to clarify expectations of who you are to each other seems like a pretty timeless human practice. No bridge needed. DTR. I liked it. With access to such a handy little acronym for the idea, I started to consider how we DTR, not just in our romantic relationships, but in most human relationships. At some point or another, we usually need to say explicitly, who are we to each other? And who we hope to be, with friends, family members, and even employers. Which brings me to the story behind this sermon. Last June, church member Hugh Wallace, who was here in the first service, but he isn't here now, so you'll have to go track him down after the service to tell him what you thought, he took me to lunch to tell me his hopes for this sermon. See, he had purchased it at the prior November service auction. It was the first time I had auctioned off a sermon, and I was excited. I like a challenge, and I like to believe that regardless of the topic, I can find within it something that intrigues me and that will be meaningful to the congregation. Sure, I had heard nightmare stories about auction sermons with obscure or incomprehensible topics, but I was undeterred. That is, until we started the conversation. "What I've been thinking about," Hugh said, "is Edward Snowden." Oh, God. "Is there any figure more polarizing right now? Some feel he's a hero, some just as strongly they're sure he's the devil himself. I could not imagine how I'd be able to pull off a sermon on Edward Snowden that wouldn't sow seeds of conflict and discontent." Well, it turns out that Hugh wasn't actually interested in whether or not Snowden's actions were laudable or deplorable. So, luckily, my initial trepidation was unnecessary. What he cared about, in fact, was that Snowden was a temp. Temporary worker, right? "How did we get to the point in our global economy," he said, "where we would trust a temp to do with such top-level confidential information? Are we so keen on the cheapest, fastest labor that we'll just hire whomever, whatever, no accountability at all, no relationship, and just tell them do the job as long as they can come cheap and without hassle? I mean, where's the moral foundation in that? Hugh, I realized, was wanting to DTR. But not about a specific relationship, but about all of us. Who are we to each other? All of us in this global economy. I mean, it sounds abstract, but it actually dictates the large majority of our lives. Buying, selling, serving, receiving, producing, consuming. We spend most of our lives doing one or the other of these things, sometimes all of them, sometimes all at once. So is this who we are? And what does that mean? So here we go. Time to DTR. Humanity, we need to talk. I mean, I really just need to know where this whole thing is going. I need to make sure we're on the same page, because lately I've just not been feeling it. And when I say lately, I mean forever. I mean, I've read our origin stories, a few different versions of them, in fact, including the one told by that man named Darwin. And in that one, as in many, the lesson seems to be survival of the fittest. I need you because of the ways you can serve me. Feed me, help me. And so I will help you, serve you, but only because of what you will do for me. Otherwise, it's all competition, and I will try to win at all costs. Yeah, I know, all my friends are saying this is a change, a new development in our relationship since capitalism or industrialism or the rise of advertising or technology or social media or, but I don't think so. I'm pretty sure this is how it's been from the beginning. We've always been in an I-it relationship. I-thou is an exception, not the rule. And our market today just reflects this human reality. As theologian Rebecca Parker puts it, homo economicus, the economic human, of market capitalism is self-interested, focused on immediate gratification of wants and needs, and unconcerned with what happens to others in the process of getting his needs met. Theologians and business people call this kind of relationship transactional. And dear humanity, this feels pretty accurate. Looking at how we act and how we move through the world, this is our relationship. We are transactional. We are objects to each other. We use each other to get what we want. No judging, just defining, DTR. This definition of our relationship was often the source of my heartbreak, in fact, when I worked as the director of a large corporation. I'd hire someone new, thinking they were going to be a real partner, really invested in the good of the whole. But ultimately, they would reveal themselves as primarily invested in what was good for them, their individual self. So eventually, I started to give in. I mean, I guess this is the deal. We, the employers, just needed the job done, and the employees just wanted the paycheck. So fastest typer, least errors, most willing to stay late and come in early, creative and collaborative, sure, but teamwork was simply a means to an end. And those ends were paycheck, profit, promotion. You get the idea. We were a fast-growing company. I was the first employee hired to start and grow the organization. Within the first few years, I had a couple hundred employees. By year 7, I had a $16 million a year budget and in the range of 1,200 employees. Year 7, 1,200 employees. It sounds amazing, right? And it was. But behind the scenes, what it meant was, you can imagine, constant change. Big pressure to get a lot done in shorter and shorter periods of time, which also meant lots and lots of turnover. Not that this turnover slowed the pressures of productivity. I mean, not when you can turn to temporary workers. Temps, like Edward Snowden, I suppose. Immediate fixes. Warm bodies, we sometimes said. Sometimes, many times, I didn't even bother to learn the temp's name. They'd be gone too quickly. And if they seemed hurt or worried about whether or not I knew their name, maybe they'd be gone even more quickly, because they clearly wanted something we couldn't offer, something that just isn't realistic, I'd think. We just need to get the job done. They got paid, after all. I mean, that was the deal. It sounds kind of dastardly in retrospect, but I really didn't think of it that way at the time. It was just the way things were. It was the game, and I do like to win. But then, and now, I wonder, is this really all we are meant to be? Warm bodies who do stuff in exchange for small paychecks in service of a profit? Because I have these glimmers. The ideas that made us, dear humanity, give it a go in the first place, the reasons we keep trying after all these generations, and the reason I think Hugh was troubled by Edward Snowden and this question of what have we come to? Because we aren't meant to be. I think we are not meant to be so disposable. We aren't just a means to an end. We aren't just objects. We are meant for something else, something more. Writer Margaret Wheatley describes how studying evolution reveals life as having two great imperatives. The first is indeed about self-determination. She says, quote, life accepts only partners, not bosses. But the second supports my glimmers and an alternative definition for our relationship. As she says, evolution reveals that all life has a need to be in relationship, to be connected to others. Independence is not a concept that explains the living world. It is only a political concept that we've invented. Evolution progresses from relationships, not from the harsh and lonely dynamics of survival of the fittest. If we look at the evolutionary record, it is cooperation that increases over time. So we might better say survival of the kind, the cooperative, the connected. We might even say that the definition of our relationship in its purest sense, its inherent definition, would not be I, it, but I, thou. Not self-interest, but generous, capable, kind, loyal, joyous. Not transactional, but covenantal. We are all in this together. We belong to each other. Amen. We are just taught, as Rebecca Parker says, to function as if we are self-interested individuals and that this is human nature. But what is truly natural, what is given in the nature of things, is interdependence. We're just taught to function as if we are self-interested individuals, as if that's human nature. Why else would we all be so heartbroken at the ways we treat each other in our global economy, except that it works against our truest and greatest selves? And yet, what are we to do, dear humanity? I mean, given how much of our structures and systems today, our habits and incentives are based on the transactional definition, how could we reclaim our true purpose? How can we re-DTR? I think back to my time in the corporate world, and I try to imagine what I could have done differently. At the time, I truly couldn't imagine. Even though I was in one of the most powerful positions in the organization, an alternative way of relating just wasn't possible. It wasn't realistic. And you can't change reality, right? Which is why this DTR is so important. We need to help each other remember that this is actually not our natural state. And the idea that it is, I call that evil. Because it makes us feel powerless and act against our best nature without us even realizing it. And that's how I define evil. Only when we resist this evil, only then can we know that we can act differently. And that what we do, all of it, in fact, all of it, every day matters. Every day we have the chance to see each other not as objects or as a means to an end, but as fellow human beings in a shared project of fostering greater life and of evolving together. To look at each other, to connect, to remember. Every moment we have opportunities to resist the I-it definition and to embody and live out the I-thou. Another chance to define our relationship. This is harder than it would seem, of course, because almost everything keeps us in transactional relationship mode, and our habits are strong and stubborn, which means we're going to need help. We need a place and a time set aside to create new habits and gain new insight, a place and a time and a community of people who will walk together, not based on what's in it for me or if I give this, I better get that, but on the idea that we give and share and serve because we are all in this together. We are partners working towards a greater and better life for all. We need a community that challenges us, that's different than us, so they can help us see things differently, help us break free from these deeply ingrained habits and ideas. We need a community where we can practice patience, humility, and forgiveness. And we need a community who will work together to bring these practices out into the larger world so that we can transform not just within, but also without. My fellow humans, my particular humanity, this is our time, and this is our place, and this is our community. This congregation and our commitments to one another give me the hope that we can live into our covenantal relationship and resist the transactional pull. It should give us all hope. No doubt we sometimes get confused and fall into transactional habits here too, and move through this community with a stance of what's in it for me. This is what I call Unitarian Universalist sacrilege. You wondered if such a thing existed? It does. When we bring our transactional relationships here, when we say those are our purpose, sacrilegious. Because this is our holy work, our sacred purpose, to bolster one another in this practice of resistance, to act for and with one another, fueled not by self-interest but by generosity, kindness, and courageous love. To see each other as more than just objects. To love and to belong. And to let God be the charge, the electricity that surges through us. Now and always. So may it be. And amen.